I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Here at TSIA, we keep coming back to a phrase. There are two parts of the sentence. The first part, the part that everybody's saying out loud right now, and then there's the second part, which needs to be said. The first part of this sentence is AI is going to change everything. We're going to build more, ship more, get more efficient. Okay, great, love it. But there's a second part of that sentence, and most companies aren't saying it. And here's what it costs to run, and here's what makes the economics actually work with AI. 2 months ago, nobody was saying the whole sentence, and the bill is coming due. Which brings me to today's guest, Kunal Agarwal, who is the co-founder and CEO of Unravel Data. Kunal and his co-founder spun Unravel out of a research project at Duke back in 2013. I think I have that right. What they build now is basically the second half of that sentence as a product. Data observability and FinOps for the modern data and AI stack. So we're going to get this insight engine humming here. Welcome, Kunal, to Tectonic. It's so nice to meet you virtually here. And excited I want to start this conversation wide because I'm excited. I think you sit in a pretty unique seat. You see the actual data and AI bills that are coming due at these enterprises. So tell us a little bit for the audience here. What are you actually seeing in the wild right now when companies are getting serious about AI and AI initiatives? Where's the money go and where can executives get blindsided or surprised by AI expenses?
Yeah. So first of all, excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And you're right. We're seeing the bills and boy, they're big. There's a lot of parts in that bill, honestly, that people are watching. And those are some of the obvious costs that you have. What we are seeing is there's a whole section where the money's going where nobody's watching. Mm-hmm. And those are, in fact, even bigger cost drivers. And these come in flavors of idle GPUs, runaway token costs, runaway token consumption, really. Mm-hmm. And also the data layer that sits underneath the AI that nobody's attributing these costs to right now. So The executives that we are working with in all these big companies are getting blindsided because the AI bill doesn't arrive as like one line. It's smeared across GPU clusters and inference calls and token economics and Snowflake and Databricks. So the bill honestly doesn't show up where you're looking. It shows up everywhere you're not looking. And that's what causes these surprises.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing there is really understanding the complete cost of AI initiatives, not just, hey, we have this, you know, whatever, OpenAI bill or whatever. It is the bigger cost. And here's a number that I stumbled on when I was doing research for this episode that kind of stunned me. And maybe you can help me with this, is that the average enterprise GPU utilization is somewhere like around 5%. And so people make these investments. And then, so you're spending like all this money and 95% of the time, you're not using the capacity. What is going on there? Why is that happening?
That's exactly right. Companies are buying these GPUs really for peak training, right? Uh-huh. And training ebbs and flows. And what we're seeing is it runs at that peak training moment for a very short amount of time. 5% sounds like the right number. Okay. Some companies may achieve a little bit closer to 10-15% sometimes. But then it idles for the remaining 95% of the time. Yeah. And it's nobody's job right now to continuously monitor it, watch it, right-size it. Uh-huh. And that's the problem, is nobody's watching the meter because that meter doesn't exist right now. Yep. It's like, you know, being in a building, a mega building, leaving the lights on when nobody's even there right now. That's really what's happening inside all of these different enterprises. So, you know, you really have to figure out what do you need and then how can you size it up and down if you could to then try to meet the actual demand with the supply, right? Yeah. And here we are talking about, you know, GPU shortages when the people who actually have it are not really using it on the scale that they should.
So let's click into that a little bit, you know, because now everyone's talking about scarcity, right? We've gone into this world of token scarcity and we can't build infrastructure fast enough. And it sounds like what you're tipping on there is capacity out there that is just not being properly managed, if you will, or utilized. And it sounds like some companies think they might have a capacity problem, but they really don't. Is that a fair sort of assessment?
Absolutely, right? I mean, besides the frontier you know, companies out there that are consistently training.
Yeah.
If you look at the enterprise companies, they really need to question, are they actually doing that? And the way to answer that question is really to get transparency first and foremost, to understand what hour of the day, what day of the week will be at what level of utilization. And that's exactly the problem. There's no meter telling you that that's happening. And then there's this, I wouldn't say artificial, but unknown scarcity that's created because of that reason. And if you had that meter, it'd be much easier to go and figure out what you actually need versus what you're actually using.
So we're going to click into that more in terms of the sort of the capability, getting your arms around this. But, you know, one thing I want to put on the table is the fact that so far, right, since AI is on the table, it has all been about, and we see this in all of our member companies, large tech companies, AI is going to take cost out. It's going to make me more efficient. It's and of course, labor is a big part of it, shrink headcount. And again, that's the first part of the sentence, right? But now we're watching, you know, this issue of all these costs showing up on the P&L, and the thing that was supposed to make you more efficient suddenly becomes a big expense. So again, we talked about the scarcity issue. It feels to me like that light bulb has gone off for CFOs, CEOs, whatever, that this is not just a free lunch. It's not just like, I'm going to spend a little bit on AI and I'm going to get all this cost savings. That there really is this balance. And this is a true story. I was talking to a member a couple of weeks ago, and they were analyzing their AI costs and saying, look, there actually are some jobs AI could do for us from a software engineering perspective that we've realized it's cheaper to put a junior coder on that right now and do it than give that to AI. So what are you seeing in terms of the calculus people are doing there, just realizing this isn't free?
Yeah, Thomas, you nailed it on the head, right? AI was supposed to be the diet. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be the buffet. And that's really what's happening right now, right? So the efficiency tool that it was supposed to be is becoming the runaway expense right now. And honestly, it's because the savings were theoretical and the spend is real. You know, you thought about all the ways in which it's going to drive costs down, but that was a slide. But then you're getting billed for tokens by the hour in that moment per question, per query, really. And that's real. So I'm not arguing here that the productivity gains or the kind of enabling technology that AI is, it's truly that for sure. But people are doing more with it, right? Not less with it.
Right.
And as it gets inside the enterprise and different departments start to use it, then 100% we're seeing every department's growth being 500, 700, 800% year over year, just because, you know, they're using AI either as an assistant or in certain cases, they're starting to use it as an agent. And that cost is only going to get up. So that's a very important question that we're having right now is, okay, if you cannot get the cost low, the equation is not switching to ROI. Are we actually getting the returns for this kind of investment that we're making?
Yeah. And as an aside here, so when AI first hit, one of the first big assertions we made with tech companies is the pricing model for AI is ultimately going to have to be some type of value or outcome-based pricing because, you know, and everyone, by the way, as you know, is going from user-based pricing to consumption. Right, per call, per whatever, because that was users were going down, but consumption was going up. So that's how I'll make my money. But what you're on is the fact that companies are going to say, look, okay, I have all this consumption going on. I'm getting the bill every month, but how does that equate to value? And if you can't connect the dots there for me, but let's click into the consumption piece of it and managing that cost. It leads us to a really important concept of FinOps or financial operations. And this is something, you know, that's not new. FinOps has been around for a while, but I was, again, doing some research here, and there's, I think there's like a FinOps association. And historically, the people in that association, very few of them were focused on the cost of AI. But now, that's a majority of what the FinOps people are focused on, right? So first of all, help the audience understand what is FinOps? If they don't have that in play, what is this function doing?
Very simply, it's to really understand what you're spending, why you're spending it, and understanding, is it worth spending that much money on computing technologies? It started off with the cloud spend, and now, of course, the AI spend and, you know, the data and AI stack spend, if you may. But it's also got to be real time, especially with AI, and not something that you review at the end of the quarter. So the other piece that we saw, you know, we just came out of the FinOps X conference, and they're saying, hey, now a majority of the companies are trying to measure, you know, that spend compared to like 24 months or 18 months ago, even, right? And the number's gone up. you know, a factor of 2x, 3x more. And what that really means is there was these 18 and 24 months where the cost was going unchecked and money spent is money that you cannot regain back. So FinOps is really just asking, like, is it worth it? And then you've got to be able to get that information fast enough so you can do something about the answer rather than, you know, just wasting those dollars.
So I'm super intellectually curious now. So at a FinOps conference, you have these practitioners. Just help me understand the profile of somebody who's in that role. Are they typically very finance oriented? Are they more sort of engineering oriented? I mean, like, what right. are analysts say? What are they?
Honestly, it's supposed to be a mix of both. But the reality on the ground is a lot of people are more financially oriented than the engineering oriented. And that really creates a friction as well, where there's one group that understands the numbers, but they cannot do anything about
the numbers.
Numbers better. And then there's the other group that's actually doing the work, the engineering work, but they don't know the numbers. So there's always this healthy tension between the two, you know, which is something that we have tried to take a stab at solving it as well, is speaking that common language between the two sides so that, you know, the engineering guys get what they want, which is availability and performance and speed, whereas the finance guys now get to understand that, hey, we're running this efficiently like a well-oiled machine and we're not actually wasting dollars. So whatever dollars we're spending is actually being put to good use.
That's interesting. And one of the things you started to hint at is the fact that things are different with AI. So even for companies out there that may have had a mature FinOps capability that was focused on traditional cloud spending, that type of stuff, like how much do we need? AI is behaving differently. You have this token-based billing and you have this issue we're chipping on GPU consumption. And so what's genuinely new, you know, about AI as it relates to FinOps from your perspective?
Yeah, so these older FinOps tools were really created around cloud spend, which is a steady state, it's predictable, it's allocatable spend, right? So old FinOps tools can tell you what happened last month. AI spend, it just breaks all that paradigm, right? Like you said, it's token-based billing per interaction. It's those GPU spikes and crashes. It's that training model that runs hot and then it goes silent. So AI spend changes by the hour. And you cannot manage an hourly problem with a monthly tool. So that's really the conflict that's happening between that older world or the cloud world versus the newer, you know, AI world.
Yeah. And again, this is what you guys are all about and shipping on. And I know you just ship new product capabilities here and tools to help this. And so talk a little bit about the new capabilities you are bringing into the market here to help people manage to this new reality.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and number one, it's a very fast moving environment like we've established, and it needs to be active in terms of figuring out where the problem is, figuring out why something happened, to then go and figure out what that resolution is. So you're using AI to go and solve AI level problems. And there's this model that we have developed over the last 10 years after looking at 10 billion or more workloads worth of information to go and figure out how these things should operate and how they actually operate inside the enterprise, and trying to find where the inefficiencies really lie when you're running this stack of AI data and the whole nine yards. So what we've really built is something that can work as an operator and not just as an advisor. And the difference between the two is, one, you have to go and ask for answers, and it may say, this could be the potential way to solve it, go and try it. Nobody has the time. Nobody has that expertise. And where we are changing that paradigm is, if you have a person that you hired inside the company that's actually responsible for a particular task, then that person figures out what to go and do, performs the task, and delivers the results. Of course, good hires only, right? So we think about Arvix AI, which is the AI engine and the automation capability of Unravel, really being that operator that understands the problem, does the automatic root cause of it. So nobody's triaging it. Nobody's trying to dig into things to go and figure out cause and effect. Does all of that, then tells you that this is the way to go and solve that problem. And if you do give it permission to inside the enterprise, then it can close the loop and take the action on your behalf, and tell you, this is what we did, and this is how much it improved it by. And if you have that running for you, then you really free up the headspace, the actual time on your calendar to go and do higher function items, things that actually move the needle for you personally and for the company.
It's almost like identifying some aspects of FinOps.
That's what I'm hearing.
Right. And so let's click into an example of the agent identifies an opportunity like, oh man, we can make this more efficient. We can, you know, help these costs go down here. Just walk through a simple example of something it would be able to identify and then go ahead and solve on your behalf. Like,
yeah,
give me a real world example.
Yeah. So, you know, just take a simple full stack view. So somebody's put in a prompt, the prompt was running on a model, that model was running on a data that came in from data pipeline. We optimize all those three layers. So we can improve your prompt. Prompt costs tokens. And if you don't have a good prompt, then you're wasting a lot of tokens.
Interesting.
We can help you select the right models. Do you really need an 80 billion parameter model when you're asking yourself?
That's a big one. I mean, I'm an IT guy by background, but I'm not, you know, an AI model guru, but it is clear to me just by the models I use and everything I read and listen to, their different models are good for different things. That's very clear. And so you're saying that by identifying that and making that selection, because again, the average professional, your average employee is not going to keep up with that crap. I mean, there's just no way. So they could be using basically a bazooka when they need like a BB gun, right? I mean, it's just like...
And honestly, everybody wants to use the bazooka because it's cool, right? And the new model drops and the biggest thing. And what are you asking? Yeah. Like, tell me the weather in San Diego? I mean, it's not, you know, the appropriate use of the bazooka. You nailed it. So we do both those parts as an example is helping you figure out which model you should use.
Yeah.
And you're not trading off. It's really a balancing act of, are you getting the right results? Are you getting the right performance? And it's not just all about reducing costs. And if you can save the money, great, go ahead and save the money as well.
Yeah.
And then the underlying data layer itself, which is, say, you know, you're building out a customer sentiment app and you need to get new customer data. Well, if that underlying data engine, which is extracting and bringing all this data to the model, is running at a frequency of every hour, but you're only updating the model once a day, you've wasted 23 processes off that data pipeline, which also costs money.
Yeah.
So you have to really look at the entire stack. And that's really the difference, which is, you know, enterprises that we work with, they have these large data lakes, which are running on Databricks, Snowflake, BigQuery, and all these other technologies. And then they're using Claude or, you know, Anthropic on top of that. And if you're only thinking about one layer for your optimization or improvement, then you're missing out on like the remaining 80, 90% of the opportunity. And that's really what you need. And like you said, you know, not everybody knows. It's not that they are knowingly causing these issues and problems as
Of course not,
It also is, you know, something that they're not wanting to pay attention to. So if it does it on your behalf, then that's better. And it's one less thing to think about. And also gives, you know, the finance guys on the other side a peace of mind that, hey, whatever technologies we have, we don't have to hold that back from our group and people because it is being used well.
So lots of follow-up questions here, because this is, I mean, such an important thread. And one of them is, I just have to ask this question. So if you are able to come in, put your platform in, start to basically optimize prompts, optimize what models are using, optimize how you're leveraging the data. So you're starting to pull these levers. Obviously, people should see cost savings. Tell me about your pricing, right? Because again, back to the world of value-based, what's the value of using a platform like that? How do you approach that with customers?
Yeah, so our pricing is very simple. It's based on the size of your environment.
Interesting.
Which means how many nodes or vCPUs or warehouses are you actually running these systems on top of? Which is a simple way of thinking about, like, if you have a small environment, you pay a little bit of money. If you've got a massive environment, you pay a little bit more money.
Yeah.
And then it's unlimited everything. So it's not user-based pricing. We want all users to be on that platform because only then you get the full value of performance, cost, reliability. We don't think about it as per workload. Okay. We don't think about it as, you know, per data ingestion. Because if you start to calculate like that, then you really need to pull out a calculator and think about what the price of an Unravel product would be.
Yeah.
So then this way, you do a one-year investment and then you reap all the benefits on top of that. And there's no cap to the benefits as well. We've seen certain companies thinking about taking it to the other extreme on value-based pricing, which is, if I save you a dollar, I take 30 cents. Well, what if I save you $20 million? Would you write me a check for 30% of $20 million? And that becomes a financial nightmare in its own right. But if you make the optimizer technology's cost as a fixed variable, and then everything else is happening above that, then it becomes very easy for the finance people to figure out the ROI of what this looks like at the end of the year.
Okay, so I'm going to have some fun with this because pricing in the AI era is super interesting. Because again, user-based pricing doesn't work. Consumption is becoming problematic. And even like you mentioned, like the snowflakes of the world, everybody who has gone to this consumption-based model is all scrambling. They're trying to basically, again, have a value conversation with the customer, right? Because the customer's like, here's my freaking big bill from all these calls or whatever. And again, they're saying, well, no, this was, you know, Salesforce has a concept of completed work, right? It's not called, like, so everyone's trying to find a value conversation so that customers feel comfortable with that consumption spend. What you put on the table is interesting. I'm gonna have I have a thesis here. You tell me how it's playing out for you. So you said basically, look, you know, it's like Goldilocks. You know, you have small, medium, large environments. Obviously, a larger environment, you're spending a lot more. You put our tools in place, we have the ability to save you a percentage, a lot more money, as opposed to a small shop, right? So you're gonna have tiered pricing based on that, right? If you're super big, you're gonna pay more. That makes complete sense. Now, I have to believe, as you have more and more and more customers running, you're going to know what those numbers are. In other words, if I am the middle guy, right, and you're going to say, hey, typically we are saving you X millions of dollars a year, and you're going to be able to put that on the table, and your pricing, you know, you said, hey, what if I saved you 20 million, right? Your pricing is going to be anchoring to that, because the more proof that you have, you're like, look, I can come into a middle guy, I'll just make up numbers. I know I can save you bare minimum, low end, 10 million, maybe 20 million. I'm just making it up, right? So if you have a lot of confidence on that, you're not going to come in there and say, no, the good news is for you, this costs, you know, $100,000 or $10,000. Right. You're going to anchor. So the better your tool gets and the better your proof points get on percentage saved, it is going to lift your pricing model. And it should, because you are proving that you can deliver. Is that a fair thesis?
That's it. I would just add one more piece over there. We actually go in with very hard business value assessment when we do our deals, because you're right. We know what we would see on a typical environment that looks and walks into much like this, but we also run a pre-scan MRI on your environment. Mm-hmm. So we say, look, as your current state, you're spending $10 million. We can save you $2 million. This is where those savings can come in.
Yeah.
And this is what your current state looks like. And we're only asking you a fraction of that $2 million to make that happen. Yeah. And then 12 months are going to grow by, and you're going to have Unravel for those 12 months. There's going to be a bunch of other things that pop up. So that's the bare minimum already. Now it's going to be the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake that you're also going to get over the next 12 months. And it becomes a very easy conversation to have that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Again, I think in the AI era, everybody's got to be connected to value somewhere in this, in a very real, not like theoretical ROI way. Not like in theory, I can save you this. You have to close that loop, you know what I mean? You know, be able to really 100%. Prove those numbers out. I think the other interesting dynamic about your capabilities here, what you're talking about, I know, again, from all the companies we talk to, when it comes to the AI era, one of the interesting dynamics is, you know, boards, CEOs, et cetera, they're like, hey, we want to go do this AI thing and we want to get the efficiencies and blah, 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 blah. But I'm not going to write you a big check to go do that. You need to figure out how to reduce costs, reduce whatever to self-fund that transformation, right? From maybe very labor intensive to more blend of AI. And it feels to me like your platform is an enabler there, to be able to come in and say, look, what you're doing right now, we could take out a percentage of that spend, which doesn't just mean, you know, you could actually reinvest that. So I'm curious if you're into conversations with people who are trying to get to that next level of transformation, they've hit this wall and you can unlock more investment for them.
All the time, Thomas, all the time. And the primary driver for that is whatever you thought you're going to spend in a year, you end up spending in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then you got to go back to the CFO department or the CFO and say, need a couple more million dollars. And that's the challenge. So what they're now saying is, look, find the money in your own waste. Go and figure out where those dollars are. And that flips this FinOps thing that we've been talking about from a cost cutting to something that creates headroom for your innovation to continuing as well, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the adding factor to that is also nobody imagined all the use cases in January, what they would be able to do with AI, because some of these models were not even out there yet.
Right.
Everybody misbudgeted right off the bat. Yeah. And then nobody even thought about like, hey, I have, 3,000 people in my department. I didn't think all 3,000 people would be using this as well.
Right. And
there's a lot of that friction. So one easy way is to go back and say, go and figure out how you can create that headroom to continue doing what you guys are doing while we go figure out how do we, fund this in a bigger way for the entire company, not just for your department.
Yeah. So I'm going to put another lens on this. So one lens is internal efficiency with my AI, because I want to keep transforming. I want to keep, building capabilities. But I need to do that cost effectively. And that is now front and center with every company trying to roll out A. So that use case is, right there in your lap. That's a beautiful thing. So that's good. But there's another one I'm curious if you are part of. And that is, again, we deal with a lot of enterprise software companies who are embedding AI now capabilities, some of the AI capabilities. And they're saying, hey, here's my new cool AI solution, right, to their customers. Now, what is the true cost for them to deliver that in a profitable manner? Because I kind of feel that's a little bit of the wild, wild west as well, that everyone rushed to get AI out there into some type of customer solution, right, in different ways.
Right.
And it's like, okay, and again, you unlock new capabilities for the customer, maybe you save some labor on your side or whatever, but what is it truly costing you to deliver that? Do you have your arms around that? So really, FinOps as part of pricing. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing there.
Yeah, everybody's trying to figure out those unit economics, right? So
yeah,
people have all sorts of flashy AI things out there and co-pilots and whatnot, right? And I think a lot of them are not cognizant of whether their pricing is going to actually get them any margins. They may be at a loss for every interaction that those guys are actually, offering up over there, right? So I think you really have to treat AI less as a science experiment, but really as a business. And which means that you have to watch for every dollar from day one. And it cannot be after the fact that, hey, let so many users and so much time pass and then we will go and figure it out. Because when you start to do that budget review, that's when you really start to realize that, first of all, we weren't able to deliver any value or the costs were too high. And that's when that gets put in the bucket of a science experiment rather than this actually driving a meaningful business forward, right? So it's going to be teams that are ultimately using their time for innovation while you have this something watching this cost piece and making sure your unit economics actually work, which are all the things that we've been talking about, right? There's tremendous opportunities for improvement there, but you got to watch it. You've got to improve it. And if that's running in the background, then you can really focus on what AI is good at. It's like, how am I actually moving the needle forward in my industry, in my product stream that can then ultimately drive value? And if it drives value, then your product's going to sell. And if your product's going to sell, then the unit economics start to work out. Right?
Yeah.
But if you're not watching the cost, and then if you start watching the cost and then you take your eyes off the innovation, then you're not doing either. That's another reason for us to exist, is you said it, you forget it, at least one part of that equation is taken care of as a constant. And there's something just operating for you while you're trying to figure these things out quickly before it hairballs into a problem that you can't control.
You know, what I'm seeing, and I'm curious, if this is your experience, but I'll give you a real world example without using the company name. There's a software company, enterprise software companies, very excited, releasing some new agents targeted toward financial services. And their claim, this particular agent is going to literally reduce the effort in this particular finance role by 70%. Okay. Massive, taking a bunch of grunt work off the table in this particular role. Okay. So they're super excited about this agent. And they're putting it out there. So that's a massive value proposition. We're not talking about cheap people here that you're targeting, right? This is a, they have a proposal, basically a platform to drive amazing value. It's going to be consumption-based price, right? On using this agent. And so my question is, to do that, two things. Again, back to pricing, are you putting the right price point on that if you're really taking out that much, labor? And do you really understand the cost on that consumption-based model? So to me, that FinOps part. So to me, there's going to be a world where that FinOps modeling is going to be rigorously done on the front end.
Right.
Before you start slinging agents out with some whatever price point that you think, I don't know, I think this is going to work, you know, and then let's see what happens, right? And then find out I'm underwater or find out I left a lot of the value monetization on the table. The customer got all the benefit and I'm squeaking by with like pennies on the call. So that's what I'm observing. Again, it's sort of early days and people don't have their arms around it. What are you seeing there in terms of how people are, you know, again, thinking about this, I'm going to price this agent. What do they do?
It's that dynamic, messy middle problem right now. We want to get products out. We want to be the first one to get the products out. We don't know what's the perceived versus the true value of this product inside the enterprise. And we definitely don't know the cost. And look, even software productivity tools were positioned that way, that, you know, you don't need 70% of your software engineering team, but the reverse is happening, right? You are growing teams. You're definitely not firing anybody. Yeah. And now you're trying to release 20 times more features in the month than you were originally.
That's right. I mean, that's what's happening.
At least as a startup, that's what we are doing, right? We're just like, this is the best thing. Now we can launch many more features.
Yeah.
So as a company, we're spending much more money and we're seeing that at every scale with all the CEOs that I've talked with as well. But on the cost side, people are getting surprised because as soon as you fire up agents, they fire up subtasks, which were not accounted for. And then there's subtasks after that. And that same agent on customer A may cost $1. And that same agent doing the same task on customer B may cost $10,000. Yeah. And that's a big delta in between the two. It all has to do with data sizes, the number of hops that this thing had to do, the number of pre-validation checks it had to do, the number of reconciliations that it had to do. Because in this case, you know, we're talking about financial software, not every accounting book is made the same from one customer to another customer. Not every process is developed the same. But the promise is the same. We'll help you close your books faster. We'll help you close these transactions better. But if the playground is not the same that you're working on, then of course the results are going to be different.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting problem. So I think you've got to, again, watch it from day one. And you've got to adjust it very rapidly. I don't know if you saw the Slack announcement where they actually reduced the price of their agent. I think it was supposed to be $10 or $12, and now it's down to like $3. And
in fact,
it's bundled in with your Slack subscription now.
Okay.
So that's an example of the CFO in that company watching very closely and saying, we don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I think at $10, you're not going to, you know, turn off our customers.
Yeah.
But now that we're seeing that we can achieve efficiencies and we're seeing that the usage may not be that high or a mix of both, we can actually bring that down and not bundle it as part of the software. We don't even need to charge anything additional for this. Yeah. But they changed that course rather quickly. And I think you need that kind of agility and to have confidence in your decision making, you need to measure everything.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting to see a cost go down with confidence that they saw they could be more efficient. My nervousness for a lot of our members is it goes the other way, right? They came in too low and they didn't. So, but it could go both ways for sure. You know, as I listen to you, I am curious, who is your primary buyer? In other words, you have a platform like this. Is it a FinOps team? If they don't have FinOps, is it a CFO? Is it people that are in the trenches? Again, like I could be an EVP of services and I've got this big AI bill that's growing.
Right.
And like, just to help me understand, and it could be all those buyers, but like, you know, typically, who are you talking to?
Look, I mean, it's the bills are getting big enough that the CFO takes notice. So the CFO is definitely involved in all these decisions these days. But ultimately, it's the owner of the data AI outcomes inside the company.
Huh.
And for companies that are, you know, in the $1 billion to $50 billion revenue range, it could be one department, one person.
Yeah.
And as soon as it gets bigger than that, then you have multiple business units who have these heads who are taking care or we're actually responsible for the outcomes. And the outcome part is important because they stuck their reputation and their neck out on the line. They said, this is the stack that we want. This is the investment size that we want. This is what we are hoping to deliver from this thing. And if not everything, most of the things have got to be right by the end of the year. And that's usually the team that says, hey, help us run this like a well-oiled machine. Help us make sure that whatever we're trying to deliver, we can deliver that at scale efficiently and that our people, which are very hard to find, are not wasting their time firefighting. Mm-hmm. Nobody signed up to be a data scientist and a data engineer to be paid at 2 a.m. to do these troubleshooting exercises, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, we hired hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of people each person, and I want to get that productivity out of those people. Mm-hmm. And they're passionate about creating these different things. So help them do their job and their job only so that they can focus on that and do that really well. So because we hit these different vectors for that department, it's really the head of that data AI initiatives that brings it unraveled to the organization.
So that, I mean, so there's clearly, there's a finance audience, but there's also, what I think I heard there is what I'll call the IT or engineering audience, because they're the ones that have made the bet on the stack. And they're the ones that are generating these bills that may be getting bigger, and they're probably the ones getting the blowback saying, hey, like, get this under control or whatever. And so they're like, I need help on this. Like, how in the hell do I optimize what I got here? Is that
accurate? And they have the right intention that they don't want to do the wastage. And a lot of times they don't know where to go and hunt for these things, or they don't have the time to go and hunt for these things, or they don't have, you know, this unit cost breakdown of these things. So we demystify all of that for them.
Yeah.
And we become that bridge between the dollars and the tech, where the dollars say, okay, the tech guys, they need something simple so that they can do their work in an efficient manner, instead of this being this mysterious black box. And that's what we do. And then the tech guys now can go back to the finance department and say, hey, for every dollar spent, we are driving it in a very efficient manner. Here's the proof. So now when we say we're spending the money, you can be confident that we're not wasting the money. It's used, not abused. And I think that is something that no CIO or CFO in the world wants to stop, because the opportunity cost of missing out on what AI can enable for your product, for your operations, for your company really, far outweighs the near-term cost investment that you may be putting into this. So this helps them feel confident that every dollar that we're spending is not being wasted. Mm-hmm. And then, say you want to go and ask for more budget, it becomes a much easier conversation to go into.
So, I mean, that leads me to I think the last question I'll put on the table to you, and that is, look at this AI era. When AI first got on the table, it was just a couple, feels like it was 10 years ago, right? It's just a couple of years ago. our argument to our members was, look, you have to jump on this train, because there is going to be a have and have nots, right? The companies that, like you just said, learn how to leverage AI, unlock value propositions, learn both efficiencies and new opportunities, like you're saying, we have engineers developing more than they ever could before. So there's a whole reason to lean in. And it's interesting, the studies are already showing that there's this compounding effect that companies that were early adopters of AI are getting better and better and better at it. And the ones that are laggards are falling farther behind. So that's already kind of playing out. I predict right now there's a second pause point. So the first one was some companies said, we're all in, and others were like, I don't know. That's a problem for them already. The second wave here, and this is, you know, you read the business press right now, and it's, you know, the whole thing about expense. You could see companies hit a pause button and say, whoa, we're going to pump the brakes because we're nervous that these costs are going to get out of control. And we're hearing that there's really, the ROI is not that big, right? So they could pump the brakes and then again, create this gap between the ones that didn't pump the brakes, right? So describe an enterprise company that gets this right on their AI journey in terms of what types of practices or mentalities, approaches are they going to have so that they don't fall into that trap that could happen here in the next, let's say, you know, 3, 6, 12 months with expense.
You've got to stop treating it like a science experiment.
Yeah.
That's over, right? So, I mean, you should always experiment to a certain degree for sure. But if your 100% of your AI spend has no outcomes around it right now, the music stops.
Yeah.
And it's just like any other budget that enterprises have. They have to be very fiduciary responsible for dollars that they're spending. And at some point, somebody's going to ask them, what did we get out of this in terms of dollars, in terms of productivity improvement? So really being able to answer that question in a mathematical equation is super important right now. So we've gone from token maxing, which I think was
just selling that long ago. That's a couple of months ago. Everyone was
Everybody and every CEO was like, guys, go use AI or I'm going to fire you. Or, you know, there were certain CEOs who were saying the AI bill's got to be bigger than your salary. And, you know, all of these kind of things, right? So But for what? If it's not driving results,
right,
then you're going to be exactly in the situation that you are at. So the companies that we are working with who are really excelling in this are twofold. One, they have embraced unit economics and treating this like a business mm-hmm. rather than a science experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And after getting the first few wins, some have gotten it in customer support, some have gotten it in software development,
yep.
some have gotten it in actual moonshot things, which is creating new features and capabilities and new products that were just unimaginable mm-hmm. without AI. Those things have already happened, by the way. Then they are embracing that they have to make their company an AI native company.
Yes.
And that's mm-hmm. a very different thing than an AI enabled company. It's the co-pilot versus we just run everything AI. Yeah. And honestly, it's the leadership that has to drive that change. And there's no better person than the CEO of the company to be the biggest AI evangelist inside that company. Because those are the people that can drive change in every department inside the company. And honestly, it's got to be every department. So we're seeing companies actually create charts, would say, in all of these different departments, am I somebody that's just experimenting on one end of the spectrum, or am I mm-hmm. creating breakthrough products on mm-hmm. the other end of the spectrum with AI? And you've got to really track, and you've got to really see, like, even your HR department, your finance department, your legal department, what are those guys doing? But then again, yeah. the music stops if there is no ROI. So the first things you got to do is, ROI is made of, it's a simple thing, right? How much is this costing? What are you getting? And if you're not able to even grasp the cost bar, which is such a basic fundamental unit, you're not going to be able to show ROI.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand the cost, then you have to prove out that the cost is efficient cost. If you're spending $10, can you do the same work with five? And if you can do it with five, then the ROI looks better. That's the phase that we are in this world right now. And the guys that you were mentioning who are accelerating on that AI journey are the ones that were able to reflect back and say, hey, we actually got this benefit.
Yes.
And now we have this capability that is our operational excellence capability inside our organization that's going to move us miles apart from our nearest competitor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really good coaching. And I think one of the big important thoughts I heard there is discipline. This is like deploying any other kind of technology, and there should be an ROI, and you have to have discipline around it, especially on the spend part. And you can do that. It's not magic. It's not like, hey, we just gave everybody a co-pilot license and magically beautiful things happened at our company. And we've seen that approach, and I'm sure you have as well. And that's right. Like you said, at some point the music stops because there is no ROI. But the companies that, again, are leaning in, they know this is real and have discipline wrapped around it. So they're really methodical on the cost side, on the ROI side. You know, they are going to pull out when they eventually become truly AI native companies. Their operating model is going to be so different and, you know, efficient and also more powerful, creative, all those things than a competitor who didn't go on that journey.
Right.
It's going to be night and day. There's just, in my mind, no doubt about that. But you got to navigate this journey with some discipline. There's no doubt about it. So.
Exactly.
I really appreciate you coming in. This has been a great conversation. I think you're on a great square because this is an important topic for so many companies in terms of making sure they have that discipline on the cost side. And I end these podcasts always with a question of the day. And so for my audience today, it's when it comes to your AI strategy, are you saying the whole sentence, not just the first half that's fun to say? Cheers, everybody.